You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Connections between the work of Andrea Mantegna and Henri Matisse may not be immediately obvious, or between Leonardo da Vinci and Honoré Daumier, but a new exhibit ties them together by showcasing some of their lesser-seen works. Mantegna to Matisse, master drawings from the Corto Gallery, a selection of 58 drawings that spans over 400 years, is currently at the Frick Collection on 70th Street and 5th Avenue until January 27th. And here to discuss the exhibit is the Frick's chief curator and deputy director, Colin Bailey, who, along with London's Corto Gallery, has brought this show to New York City. Welcome back to our show.
Delighted to be back.
Didn't you cull this show from over 7,000 works on paper in the Corto Gallery's collection? How did they come to own so many works on paper?
Well, I can't say that I saw every drawing, but they do have 7,000 drawings, and they're not an old institution. They were founded in 1932. But their founders believed that if you were going to be a student of art history, you should have real works to look at. And over the years, they have had tremendous bequests. So 7,000 drawings, 20,000 prints, and they're in boxes, they're for students and faculty to study, but of course, they're never on permanent view.
So the Corto is now like other museums in London. They do have exhibits.
They have a fabulous gallery, of course, in Somerset House. They're famous for their impressionist pictures, their post-impressionist pictures, their great Rubens, their silver collections. They have a collection, and they have rotating shows of their drawings. In no institution are drawings permanently on view, as you know.
Well, the last time the Corto displayed its master drawings collection was 21 years ago, and according to its head, this selection clarifies many of the changes that have occurred in that institution since then. How do these drawings reflect those changes?
Well, I think the biggest change is a very dynamic and engaging department of prints and drawings and a curatorial staff that is eager for drawings to be used by students, to be seen by collectors, art lovers, interested public members.
And you chose 58 of the 7,000 drawings. You could have just stuck to all the most famous artists. You have a fair representation here, but some of these artists are less famous.
Yes.
Because you were also trying to say certain things about how artists work.
You know, I think the biggest pleasure for this show was to do something that we don't question very much when we look at great paintings. We are used to walking through galleries, if we can, where we see the Western art tradition in Europe shown by signal works. We wanted to do the same thing with the Courtaulds collection and walk us through Europe, north and south, from the late 15th to the early 20th century. And so if there was a great drawing that showed Venice in the early part of the 18th century by Piazzetta, and perhaps an artist you were thinking of, not so well known, we chose that over a lesser work by a more famous name.
But Piazzetta also is an artist who was well known for character studies.
That's right, and his drawings are quite over 2,000 drawings by him, more genre-like, more anecdotal than his religious paintings, where he was a great master of that. And this one drawing of a magus showing a young acolyte something, we can't quite see what it is. It's mesmerizing.
He was famous for character heads.
Yes,
that's because he liked to draw interesting faces rather than beautiful faces.
And he wanted to take situations that were enigmatic and make them into something mysterious.
Well, this show covers 400 years. Can you say that there's a certain commonality from the oldest sketches to the newest ones?
I would say the commonality is quality. That we have, in each category, whether it be a sketch, a finished drawing, an autonomous sheet perfectly formed, or an artist's first idea, they are very, very fine examples.
But they all reveal the thinking processes of artists, whether they're showing interest in a certain thing, or whether they're preparing or thinking through to make a painting or an engraving or an etching. Would these artists be surprised that we're interested in how they brainstormed?
Well, Michelangelo would not be surprised, because his great drawing of the dream was done as a complete finished work to be viewed, discussed, seen, and commented on. Pontormo, on the other hand, whose beautiful drawing of a young assistant graces the catalogue's cover, Pontormo, I think, would be amazed that this drawing that was a working sheet, handed around, is now being studied and hung on a wall. But he would be, I think, very happy.
Well, but Michelangelo's Dream is the most celebrated independent drawing of the Quarto's collection, they say. It's really hard to say anything is the best.
Yes.
But that's because it was a complete drawing?
Well, it's because there's a group of drawings that he does in his career that are not studies, that are not working things out for other compositions, that are very complete, and that is a different category from most of the drawings that you'll see in this exhibition.
Well, some of the drawings, like Bruegel's Kermis at Hoboken, are completely detailed. This is because it was really a drawing that was meant to be used for an etching or an engraving?
Exactly. I mean, that is another distinction. Some of the most finished drawings in the show are done as blueprints for engravers to make a print.
And since you don't have the two together, if you did, well, you do in the catalog, what do we learn about the process of going from drawing to engraving?
Well, what I think we see is how the, if you like, the obligation to make a very full and complete composition does not constrain the artist. In other words, his genius can come through even though he's being meticulous and very careful.
And in some cases, we see these really meticulous drawings of figures that are not the main figures in the final work, but the artist felt it was necessary to think them through just as completely as the major figures.
Yes.
I'm thinking of, for example, a drawing of a man pouring wine in a Watteau drawing, or Veronese's studies for his Christ carrying the cross.
The Watteau drawing is a very good example because, as you say, it's one of several figures. It's a drawing that is a study of a model that Watteau made more than once. And we feel that we are just in front of that figure in the studio as Watteau is drawing.
My guest is Colin Bailey. We're talking about an exhibit, Mantegna to Matisse Master Drawings from the Courtauld Gallery, that is currently at the Frick Collection on East 70th Street, right off of Fifth Avenue. Now, the show includes watercolors, chalk drawings, some things in pencil, ink. Was it important to give us a full range and just think of the word drawing as meaning a lot of different things?
That is certainly part of the experience of this show, that we see, as you've just pointed out, the range of techniques. But it wasn't, to be honest, it wasn't my first thought, and it wasn't my colleague's first thought. For instance, the English 18th century school is famous for its watercolors. And so we see beautiful examples by Town, by Cousins, by Turner. But for Constable, we chose a very meticulous black and white chalk drawing of a church that he visited every day. And so for Constable, who you think of as sketchy and coloristic, we chose something in black and white.
Because Constable did those wonderful landscapes. His studies of skies, I would have thought, would have been what you would have chosen first.
Well, the Frick has two of those, and we're very happy to have them. But in fact, we wanted this drawing because it was so strong and unusual.
Do you think when you're putting a show together of this sort, also of the teaching aspect of it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the Courtauld is a teaching institution, but what we wanted to do was really allow people to understand a period, a century, a school, but not to make it wasn't a didactic classroom exercise.
Our listeners can get a sense of what we're talking about because we have a slideshow of some of the works on our show page at WNYC, drawings by Mantegna, Turner, Michelangelo, and a number of the other artists that we will be talking about. And you begin with Andrea Mantegna's Studies for Christ at the Column. Now, Mantegna is an interesting artist partly because he was one of the first artists to say, you know, I'm not really all that interested in color, as great a colorist as he was. But he had this all of his paintings are drawing in some way, aren't they?
And they have he really responds to the classical tradition. The Mantegna is one of the few drawings in the show that we were able to show on both sides. Because one thing that we must remember is many of these drawings were works in process, were note-taking. And so the artists used both sides of the sheet. And in the Mantegna, you can follow him as he goes from the first idea of Christ oppressed to the final iteration, which is so much more majestic and moving.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of these things are just, they look like they were ripped out of a sketchbook.
And some of them, if not ripped out, at least carefully cut out.
Art historians have dated the second piece in the series, Leonardo da Vinci's study for St. Mary Magdalene, to various periods in his career that range from 1480 to 1509. In the case of drawings, somebody like Leonardo, who was great pretty much from the start, is it all that difficult to figure out when he did something?
It can be very difficult. And in fact, one of the great Leonardo experts who is in New York now, Luke Sison, gave a lecture on this drawing at the Frick. And the way he worked was to show drawings done at the same time. The handwriting is similar. And that, the changing in handwriting, helps you date a drawing.
In the case of Leonardo, he seemed to use drawings for many different reasons, sometimes just because he had an idea. Sometimes because he saw it, just like somebody riding on the subway and drawing somebody sitting across from him. And sometimes, of course, to work out big pictorial problems.
And that, I think, is an insight that's true for so many artists. Look at the Rembrandt in our show, this very beautiful red chalk drawing done in probably 5 seconds and capturing either a memory or a moment.
One of the pieces that appears to have been created as a standalone is Daumier's The Hypochondriac. He was inspired by Molière in doing this?
He loved the irony and, the sort of burlesque of Molière. And Daumier, who himself was a very astute political commentator, a satirist and a prodder of inflated egos, loved the notion of Molière's characters, the way Molière made jokes at the bourgeois' expense.
And what would have happened with that drawing? Would it have been put on the art market at the time?
By the middle of the 18th century and certainly into the 19th century, drawings become saleable objects and are often made, as in Daumier's case, a beautifully finished watercolor is something that will be sold by a dealer or by the artist himself to a ready market.
Well, one of the characters in this work holds onto a comically oversized clyster used to administer an enema. So there were risque elements in some of these works.
Risque, but of course, in period piece. So you could attach it to an idea of Molière as this salty, a great writer from the 17th century.
One of the things I got from the show was art historians, of course, always want to look back at the records and find out what job an artist was working at any given time, where he or she was living. But we also learn an awful lot about the thought processes from looking at the work itself and the way that we might look to a novelist's works to understand what was going on in his or her mind.
Well, and I think perhaps the greatest example of that is the Rubens beautiful drawing, large drawing of his young wife, Helena Formon, this 16-year-old girl. Rubens is 53. He's married for a second time. She's unveiling herself. Some of the drawing is very finished. Some of it is just sketched in.
There's a wonderful exhibit of Matisse's work at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and we see him thinking through a work through subsequent drawings and sometimes subsequent paintings, which function as drawings, until he comes up with the finished piece.
Mm. And these, many of our drawings, and the catalogue explores this more than we can on the walls, these are stages, as you pointed out, stages that lead to other stages that might suggest an avenue not taken. That is why, as Diderot said, why does a sketch give us so much pleasure? It's because you have a sense of seeing the artist's mind at work.
The Frick is also showing separately Van Gogh's portrait of a peasant. Do you see that as a sister piece to the show?
Well, we do, perhaps rather serendipitously, because we have a beautiful drawing from the Courtauld set in Provence, the same moment at Arles, of a tile factory in the outskirts of the town, and the painting from the Norton Simon, this blockbuster of a single picture, is full of the south of Provence.
Now, the Frick seems to have a wonderful working relationship with the Norton Simon, Courtauld as well.
We do. We want to continue with both of those institutions.
And I thank you so much for coming by to talk about these wonderful shows currently at the Frick Collection. This one until January 27th, and then it goes back to London?
Then they go home. They go home and back into their boxes.
Oh, how sad. It's called Mantegna to Matisse, Master Drawings from the Courtauld Gallery. And my great thanks to Colin Bailey, who is the Frick's chief curator and deputy director, for stopping by to talk with us once again.
Thanks so much.